Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 11th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it is Casual Friday. And as such, Cliff Schechter will be joining us to look back on this lunacy of the week. Also on the program today, ostensibly to give us a film recommendation, but inevitably to pitch his eBay wares, Matthew Film Guy will be with us. And of course, we will ask on the program today, how much is Israel looking for a new war? Meanwhile, Homeland Security had almost quit. Not because we're ripping apart families at the border, but because her fifis were hurt. Meanwhile, Trump wants to crush the federal children's health insurance program. And AT&T regrets paying Michael Cohen all that money. Top White House official responsible for protecting us from pandemics just quit, not to be replaced. Little germs are good for you.
I don't really like pandemic talk.
Believe in yourselves.
And ICE, now with even more reasons to abolish ICE. And surprise, Donald Trump drops his promise to have Medicare negotiate drug prices. Mick Mulvaney essentially destroys student loan protection division of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And Trump continues to pack federal courts. And lastly, Sean Hannity. Shitty talk show host, yes, but even a worse landlord.
You knew I was a snake.
Nobody calls John anymore. Nobody except for the evictors. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, still settling into the new studio and working on some finer touches. We're still on the old mics. We'll hopefully have that change soon. Some people like the sound of these mics.
Your voice is very boomy in my ears.
It's a little bit, I think that it's actually more of a function of the event we were attending last night and the amount of alcohol I consumed. So that I think I can get that same effect achieved by in the other mic. But I went to one of those, we went to the, like a young, what would you call this? Like a leftist technocrat. No?
I mean, I'm not a technocrat and no. I go to it.
No, I'm not saying that, but that's, it's...
It's a good description of Sean McElwee, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if technocrat.
Oh, you went to one of those.
I went to like a political lefty happy hour.
Don't call it technocratic.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it spans a range from, you know...
Techno-socialist.
Good faith sock Dems to people like me.
That's right. Exactly.
Naive losers to people like me.
It was at a bar that I had not been in probably 20 years. And so that was fun. And there's not many of those bars left anymore. They usually like have now turned into, I mean, I got off on like Houston and I was completely disoriented because the scale of buildings now is so dramatically different than it was 10 years ago. It's shocking. Folks, speaking of, shocking, or I guess growing somewhat older. window treatments, right? It's one of those soulless adulting terms for something that's necessary but boring, let's face it, as get all. Your blinds, you don't even want to think about them unless you move or they come crashing down as you pull that string. When they're right, everything in your home looks better. When they're wrong, everything in your home looks like crapola. But taking the time to pick them out sounds expensive. It sounds incredibly boring. And for some folks, I'm not pointing at anybody.
Just literally impossible.
Literally impossible because it's just too difficult.
Just not going to happen, right.
But Blinds.com makes it really easy for you. Not sure what you want or even where to start? With Blinds.com, you get a free online design consultation. You need to know nothing except for your ability to take pictures of your home, your house, your apartment, whatever. They send back custom recommendations from a professional for what will work with your color scheme, your furniture, your specific rooms, your sensibility. They'll even send you free samples to make sure that everything looks as good in person as it does online, and every order gets free shipping. This is the best part. If you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color. Now, I actually got a compliment when we redid the studio that George said to me that
I saw Sam get this compliment, and he was really happy to receive
it. I was so happy about it.
Right, right.
That my measurements on the screens were correct. Because
did you see that, everybody?
I measure multiple times. I am totally buy into the measure twice, cut once philosophy, and it always, I still screw up. So even if you do that, Blinds.com will remake your blinds for free. I want to test that proposition, see how many times I can screw up with the measuring to get them to resend the blinds. I did it again. I'm sorry. I screwed up. I missed it by an inch. They've really made it easy for you, so there's no excuse to leave up those mangled blinds that make your place look like, well, you know, a crap show. For a limited time, get up to 20% off of everything at Blinds.com when you use the promo code MAJORITY. That's Blinds.com, promo code MAJORITY for up to 20% off everything. Faux wood blinds, cellular shades, roller shades, more. Blinds.com, promo code MAJORITY. Rules and restrictions apply. So John McCain's back in the news a little bit because of Gina Haspel. He has come out against her confirmation to the to be the head of the CIA based on torture. And John McCain, that said, back even when there was debate on the Senate floor, and I guess this must have been, I don't know, 10 years ago now, John McCain prevented it from the CIA, if I remember correctly, being obliged to go by the military handbook when it comes to torture. But nevertheless, in his waning days, because he is ill, although I guess Lindsey Graham has said that he thinks that John McCain is going to beat the brain cancer. It's very,
ever
very rare.
Ever.
In his waning days, he came out and sent out a fairly important statement that may hopefully provide cover for people to vote against her in the maybe the Republican Party. But I think Joe Manchin has announced that he is supporting her. So we'll see. It's going to be close. But the knives are out for John McCain, folks. And at Fox News, they do not accept that. They have no countenance for that kind of insubordination. Here is, who are these guys? It's Charles Payne, who himself is a lunatic, and Thomas McNinnery. I can't remember. This guy used to be around all the time during the Iraq war, if I remember correctly. But here they are.
Well, she can't use it anymore because we've determined the Congress that it's not legal. The fact is...
Pause it. I should just say he's referring to Gina Haspel not being able to use torture anymore.
This is John McCain. It worked on John. That's why they call him Songbird John. The fact is those methods can work and they're effective as...
Wait, go back a little bit. Let's get the wind up to this.
Wow.
Now, I don't ever, ever, ever recall, and when Cliff comes on, who wrote the literally wrote the book on John McCain, if you ever heard John McCain referred to as Songbird John.
Obama called him that. He said, Songbird John's whole agenda, it's top down, not middle out. Songbird John couldn't even keep his mouth shut in Vietnam. He's always going to fail the middle class.
It sounds like a children's poem, doesn't it? All right, but go ahead.
Well, she can't use it anymore because we've determined the Congress that it's not legal. The fact is John McCain, it worked on John. That's why they call him Songbird John. The fact is you those methods can work and they're
effective. Pause it. Now, I wonder if that like little stutter that he has afterwards is the producer going in his ear like, you got to take that back. You got to take that back. Don't say that.
I was wondering if it was him thinking, like, am I actually getting away with this without him stepping in and saying
or anything? Him, like, physically readjusting himself because his balls take up, like, all of his seating area. We were just talking about how we're going to be disrespectful after John McCain passes away. I've never contemplated in my life.
But
like, yeah, that's why he failed when he was getting his nails pulled out in North Vietnam for 5 years. What a loser.
Trump totally got away with it, though.
That's true. Trump got away with it, but this is actually an escalation of Trump. Trump didn't say, like...
Trump didn't want him to get captured. This guy's saying that he collapsed under torture.
He could even withstand torture. What a loser.
I like people who weren't tortured.
Who don't crack under that type of torture.
But
I wonder if he's like, he had a moment where he's like, oh, geez, did I just say that on TV? Good.
The Congress said it's not legal. The fact is John McCain, it worked on John. That's why they call him Songbird John. The fact is you those methods can work, and they're effective, as former Vice President Cheney said. And if we have to use them to save a million American lives, we will do whatever we have to.
Sir, thank you very, very much. Really appreciate
Your ability to say that. Look, you know, here's the bottom line. There's never been the ticking time bomb scenario they're talking about. But if it is a question of a million people losing their lives, then the president could order this and break the law and then deal with the consequences. I mean, if that scenario is so dire and it is so rare, then the president can break the law and then deal with the consequences and see if he can just or she can say to the rest of the country, I broke the law and I did so for these reasons and justify it. But the idea that we would put it into A, that we would put it into a legal framework, or B, that we would reward, not just not punish. This is not just a question of impunity. This is not just a question of lack of accountability, but reward someone who did this, who had this close proximity, if not direct involvement in the torture program, is just reprehensible.
That's why we call him Songbird Mohammed.
It also
couldn't withstand it.
It doesn't make any sense, right? Because he's mocking him for cracking under torture, and then he's saying torture works and is effective.
Right.
So, like,
let's do it.
Maybe it's not so easy to withstand torture.
Well, I'm not sure what the point is, but we don't know that that John McCain gave up anything, anyways. And experts will
sure
say
we do total pussy.
Torture has been used by regimes to get fake admissions, to get statements, false statements, that you can get anyone to say anything.
It's always important, though, to note, I did, you know, yesterday, that torture is not effective, but that's always the second order argument. Like, it's just unacceptable, regardless of, you know, information gleaned.
Yes, and it also happens to be illegal under about a half a dozen statutes, as well as the Geneva Conventions. In this
Songbird
country.
Sam.
There you go.
Don't torture me. I'll give you the info already. What do you want to know about Air America?
This one seems very friendly to me. I'll tell you everything you want to know.
We were having a cigarette and a coffee, and then the other one tortured me.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. The Majority Report. I am Sam Cedar. This is Friday, and this is a song that we often play on a Friday. But apparently, sometimes.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. Hello, Cliff.
Hello. There's a lot of L's in there.
You know,
it's that limited.
Cliff.
Very limited liability company.
I have a proposal for you.
Oh,
Libertas LLC, you used Latin. Perhaps had you used something more like essential consulting, you would be doing even better today, Cliff, as an LLC.
God. Apparently, if I just called my LLC essential instead of Libertas, the money I could have brought in from so many solid corporations, just hiring me for advice, I'm not really trying to affect the outcome of anything. But just to let, so I could let them know how the president's thinking.
Well,
that would be hugely helpful.
I mean, think of all the corporate money you could have gotten just to get insight into what's going on in the Majority Report.
I could have gone to AT&T and said, hey, guys, give me $600,000. And every time those guys talk out about what a bunch of insidious Marxists, once the insidious Marxists, their talk out about how evil and corporate you are, I can warn you.
There you
and
go.
Like, I'll call you up and just tell you, and you $600,000.
And then
I feel like that's a good deal.
And we get paid on both ends because then they start advertising on YouTube. That apparently is what the NRA has done now. That the NRA on YouTube, I think, is like I've been told, shows up all the time on our channel. But all right, with that said,
here's the other question, and I just want to say quickly in terms of, you know, based on recent events, because the NRA also started advertising on either Iranian or Nicaraguan TV.
Oh, is that right? What? Oh, because of Oh my God.
That was my in-depth Ali North joke.
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me. Right, we could have talked about that too.
Well, if you want to throw that in, we can. I love how we're in the process of ripping up agreements with Iran because you know they don't serve us well, but apparently we're good with naming the guys ahead of one of the key linchpins of right wingdom who made agreements with Iran. Not that they were so good or you know constitutional or stuff, but I guess you know it's like with Dick Cheney and the Koch brothers, Iran, awesome when you profit from them. Not so good. Well, actually, really, it's just profiting from them. So if you profit from the war, great. If you profit from the peace, great. Really, any which way you can profit, it's all good.
All right. Well, let's put a pin in that for a moment when we talk Gina Haspel, because I think there's some. there's some themes that connect those two. But let's stick with what we learned about Michael Cohen this week, the revelations of just how much he was paid, and. What's interesting about this is that there is the angle where he was paid by a Russian oligarch through basically a surrogate, but also, and maybe even relevant, is that he was paid by multiple corporations because he was selling supposedly access to Donald Trump. Here is Donald Trump. What was this? Last night in Indiana. And look at how much the disconnect between what has been, aside from Iran, which I think is actually in many respects a far more important story, but certainly the second most important story of the week, the disconnect between that existing and what the MAGA hat wearing fans of Donald Trump in Elkhart, Indiana are aware of as he says right. This. I mean, this there should be a laugh track, a like, you know, those VH1 thought bubbles over everybody's head. I mean, this is just so divorced from reality. But here we go.
Sponsored a bill that has become a law. This November, Indiana will face an important choice. You can send a really incredible swamp person back to the Senate, like Joe Donnelly, or you can send us Republicans like Mike Braun to drain the swamp. Under my administration, we're fighting against the lobbyists, the special interests, and the corrupt Washington politics.
I mean, honestly, the
if by fighting against, because I know he's not like what you would call a vocabularyist.
he's an incredible
well aware of the
not vocabularyist.
I vocabulary dash ist. So. Being that he's not a man of many words and understanding of the phrases and the stuff, I can go with it. Maybe in his world, what he means by because of there is he means that we're going after the swamp, going after which means we're inviting them in to make all of our policy decisions, decide everything. I mean, you know, the broader theme here is like this and people don't kind of love talking about this. But this is what fascism actually is. I mean, you know, it is corporatism hiding behind populism, right? I mean, there's a reason why in Germany they got the word socialist in the name of their party, right? There's a reason why, you know, in various dictatorial movements, they always work in things like socialist or people, you know, People's Republic or whatever. Like because in the end, of course, that's all just a lot of garbage. You know, everything is about gaslighting people. Everything is about looking you in the face and flat out lying. And so these guys aren't doing something that's so divorced as much as they're following a well-worn plan in the past for how dictators have risen to power, which is say that you're for the people while really being for the very people that you're pretending you're against, which are large out-of-control corporations who clearly felt comfortable enough putting, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars in this account. And this is only one of how many shell companies has this jackass set up and Trump in the past. And I mean, we know so little of what these guys have done. I think, I mean, I can't even imagine how much more is out there in various other accounts, various other payments that have taken place. And they're not even denying it, Novartis and these guys, because they don't really know what to say. They're like, yeah, we paid for access. I mean, they try to make it sound better, right? We want to know how he was thinking, you know, and that kind of thing. But, you know, this is, I mean, the Constitution only lists a couple of actual straight out ways you should be impeached. Bribery, public corruption is one of the ones listed in there.
Well,
I don't think it gets any more obvious.
I mean, there's a couple of things that are interesting about this, because, I mean, clearly, if he can go and get these people to cheer, drain the swamp on a week where the one thing that is clear is that, like, he's as swampy as whatever he and more nakedly
more
so.
More swampy. Like, I don't think we've had swampy on this level.
Well,
before.
I mean, haven't we, though? I mean, of course we have, right? I mean, like,
no,
we know.
I mean,
well, no.
I've seen those pieces, Sam. We've had it there. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but as overtly as this, in a way where we're just saying it doesn't even matter anymore, and we'll actually admit to it, and we'll still then yell, drain the swamp, and you'll still support us. Never as overt as this. I'm not saying that covert isn't nasty and bad for policy, but they're not even hiding it.
From what I can tell, we can find a similar, you know, less ham-fisted, more idiotic, but there happens to be more scrutiny on this administration on this issue. And I think we have seen it in the past. We've seen it in the past with it, with the multitudes, right? I mean, regardless of who it is, and you know, whether it's, you know, Obama officials, just you were at the DNC in Philly, right? Like the whole Uber thing that was going on there.
I mean,
it was
look,
full.
That's gross. But I'm not saying that in terms of our campaign finance system and what you're allowed to get away with. And what Democrats do too, what everybody does, because it's our system, with some exceptions. I mean, there are some folks out there, who are saying they're not taking corporate PAC money, and I respect the hell out of that because that puts you in a pretty tough position. But yes, both systems are. But I'm talking about the stuff where even before any, you're right, he's gotten more scrutiny of, like, so they looked into this LLC. But did we really need to know that? I mean, major corporations are going to his hotel in Washington and taking out all the rooms. And
sure.
Gee, I wonder why.
Sure.
I mean, and nobody's done that before. I mean, in other words, they're not hiding it even behind campaign contributions. They go and they join Mar-a-Lago, where he upped the entry fee by, to what, $500,000 or something ridiculous? I mean, you know, that's what's going on.
But I guess I'm saying what Cohen is doing seems to be, on some level, I mean, like I say, I think he's a lot more sloppy about it, because you don't use your LLC, your consulting firm, also to pay off hush money to people.
Well, that's the other part of this. Well, the dumbest, we're lucky how dumb and sloppy they are.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, because there's been a lot of speculation, and you know, that Michael Avenatti, the lawyer who came out with this stuff, I don't want to say he was implying this, but he was getting close to implying that maybe some of this money flowed out to Trump, and people are curious about the outflows of this money. And maybe it goes to Trump.
The only way it didn't flow to Trump is if Trump didn't know it existed.
Right. And which I think is also,
we know what kind of character, if Cohn did this all as a side gig, which he definitely is capable of doing, then yeah, then Trump may not have gotten any. But we all know Trump doesn't. Nobody's allowed to do stuff around Trump and use what Trump has accomplished in his mind and get rich off of it. He needs a piece, so there's no way.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Do you think Lewandowski gave him a piece? Lewandowski did the same thing, didn't he?
Was he? I don't think he was still working with Trump at that time. He had left and was doing the stuff.
Yeah, he was just calling him on the phone. But what was Michael Cohen doing for Trump at this time, other than just keeping secrets, which I'm sure Lewandowski
was still his lawyer, and he had a position in his organization.
I guess. All his job was paying off, I guess. I don't know.
He's also deputy finance chair at the RNC, which should, again...
That has gotten very little scrutiny. Questions. That has gotten a lot less scrutiny, and I think deserves a lot more, frankly, because...
Oh, my God. I mean, look, is there any doubt at this point that this money hasn't flowed? I mean, we know one of these other oligarchs that was on a list to avoid put a couple million dollars into the RNC, the Republican Senatorial Committee Fund, and Mitch McConnell was all too happy to take it. I mean, again, like, I'm not sitting here arguing that Mitch McConnell colluded with Russians or that, but it makes these guys a little less wanting to look into this kind of thing. When we know with Cohn at the RNC, with the guys accepting money from some of these Putin-connected, you know, oligarchs who came over to the United States or whatever their status is, I mean, there's just no doubt this whole place has been corrupted by this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we had the podcast I do, Unprecedented, we had Asha Rangappa on the other day, who I think is a very interesting person. And she was talking all about a lot of this kind of stuff with the various entities. And I can't go through it all because she's smarter than I am. But, I mean, you know, with Devin Nunes and some of the things going on. I mean, I don't know, man, we've maybe seen 10 or 20% of this, if we're lucky, about what's going on there.
Now,
I mean, you learn that when you live in Washington and work there. You turn over a stone, you know, God help you when you turn a couple more over.
Well, that's, I think, one of the better aspects about this is that people are turning over stones. But let me play this clip from the Politico Daily podcast. It's also, they do this as a newsletter, too. And this I find fascinating because on one hand, what Michael Cohen is doing is very similar to what has been done in the past. He does it a little bit less stylishly and also has that one facet about where's the money actually coming out of and where is it headed to. I mean, for all we know, like you say, this could be the tip of the iceberg, and he could be using the RNC, frankly, as some type of laundering entity. Just, you know,
sure. I mean,
God knows what this guy could have been doing. But listen to this attitude from Politico, because this is fascinating. They generally just deliver news, but they decided to do a little bit more editorial comment. And it was basically to say, hey, this what we're seeing with Cohen is a problem, is a dynamic that exists throughout our government. So suck it up. And listen, yeah. Just listen to this.
Okay. This morning, we are sending out a welcome to the reality of Washington note. In the last 2 days, we've seen the world get introduced to two elements of D.C. that many of us know well, political intelligence and big dollar fundraising. Here are a few things that happen in D.C. that might, but shouldn't, catch some people by surprise. Yes, Paul Ryan flew across the country to meet with Sheldon Adelson, and when the super PAC asked for $30 million, he had to leave the room. Yep. It's totally weird, but that's how campaign finance works. They can do everything but ask for the big dough. It happens routinely in both parties.
Yes, guys like Michael Cohen routinely get paid $1 million to offer insight about their ex-boss. Yeah, it's crazy, but many readers of this newsletter would not have their McMansion in McLean, their BMW, their membership at Army Navy, second homes in Delaware, cigar lockers, and endless glasses of Pinot at BLT Steak in Tosca if that kind of stuff didn't happen. Newsflash, $1 million is not even a rounding error for massive corporations, although the smart companies route these deals through law firms.
Here's the bottom line. A scintilla of information gives a company an edge. That price tag would be completely worth it for a member of Hill leadership, and intel on Trump is worth much more than that. It seems like Cohen offered squat. So yes, people work for years on the Hill for $60,000 to make three times as much money on K Street to work much shorter days. And guess what? Random 24-year-old Hill aide, they don't like you for your personality. You're boring and green. They want to know what your boss is talking about, what he's worked up about, and what he thinks about a random bill.
Yes, people pay for access. It's called a fundraiser. Why do you think restaurants in D.C. have 5 private rooms? Why do you think companies buy massive townhouses on Capitol Hill? Why do you think members of Congress hold PAC retreats at resorts and lobbyists go in droves? It ain't for the camaraderie. And yes, all the people who say they're against the system participate in it. Yes, the people who rage against the machine are greasing the skids. Watch cable TV, look for a lawmaker who says the system is broken, and then take a gander at their campaign finance report. We bet they have tons of PAC contributions and tons of lobbyists giving them dough.
And no, the swamp is not drained. Give us a break. We're not defending the status quo, but welcome to reality. This is the campaign finance and lobbying system Congress created.
Well, now, I think that, and I can't remember her name, but she doesn't, I don't think draining the, defending the status quo means what she thinks it does. the idea, I mean, here's the thing, is that
you keep
like...
using that term. I don't think you know it. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, is that we have this opportunity, which is a fairly unique opportunity, that the media is scrutinizing everything that goes on in D.C. in a way that they generally don't. And I think this
they just
is,
accept that's common practice, and so they're okay with it. I think you're absolutely right. And common practice is kind of disgusting.
It's highly disgusting. It's highly problematic. And really, what we're seeing from the Trump administration is just a more naked, less polite version, which puts it into stark relief. Plus, there's a lot more sunlight, so it's a little bit of both, right? But the idea that Politico is out there. And they say they're not defending this, but in fact, they are. They are. Not only are they defending this, they're saying like you are being silly to assume that this is anything other than gravity, and you can't fight gravity. So just suck it up. Plus, you know, we know a lot of our listeners are also so associated with these businesses that we don't want to make anybody feel bad. But it really is.
They're the ones that pay for the newsletter. You have to remember that comes out in the morning.
Exactly. And it's
you don't want to piss those guys off.
It's fascinating to see this sort of creep back in, this sort of notion of like, just suck it up. It is disgusting. And because it doesn't give much room really, does it, to deal with the outright corruption that is the Trump administration.
Right. Well, I mean, I think what you're saying is right. Like, I think the more brazen behavior by the Trump people, that it's right out in the open. What I'm hoping is, you know, you have to remember, after Nixon and the Congress that was elected in 1974, that's when a lot of our campaign finance was passed. Right. The problem was, it also was about a year or two after the Powell memo, which some people here may be familiar with. Which, and one of the big things that Lewis Powell, who became a Supreme Court justice, advocated for, was that the Chamber of Commerce and other corporate groups spend money, create groups like the Federalist Society, to argue these cases in court that would give corporations more power, because they said, oh, private enterprise is under assault, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so there's a direct line here. I mean, if you look from the 1976 Supreme Court decision, Buckley versus Valeo, right, where money becomes speech, right? I mean, that is probably one of the worst decisions in terms of our democracy, probably in the history of our democracy. I mean, that's up there with Dred Scott and things like that. Because what that does is you go from there to what? I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. There was the Virginia State Board case where they protected advertising, you know, and made corporate advertising. They equated that with speech. You know, yeah, you get to a few other cases in the 90s. I'm trying to remember what they are. But then, of course, you end up at Citizens United, right? And which just takes all of this garbage and builds upon that. So now you've actually got precedent, if you will, for 40 years where they've been, you know, they've been undoing. I know Citizens United also obviously, you know, overturned certain states like Montana that didn't allow corporate contributions. They wouldn't allow them to do it. I mean, there are a number of other states also. But, you know, that's the history of the right over the last 40 years. So it's no accident that we end up here. I mean, lobbying was always going to get more brazen, you know, in the past. It was more of a culture of shame around it that stopped it from happening. It's very hard to kind of make it illegal for somebody to go and talk to somebody and advocate for something, right? But we could have stronger rules around the way former members get access to certain places and other people don't, you know, which is garbage, the way the cooling off period gets shorter all the time and it's not really enforced, and then you can get away with calling yourself a consultant when you're really a lobbyist. Which, by the way, being bipartisan here, that was Tom Daschle kind of pioneered some of that stuff. I'll end quickly and say my hope is we've been heading in this direction on the corporate front for 40 years now. And my hope is that what Trump has done will just kind of take it to another level, that the cleansing, purging fire will arrive, and that maybe we'll react the way we did after Nixon, although that was short lived. So this is longer. And pass serious reform, because it's clear that this system is not working if we actually believe in democracy.
You know, the I spoke to David Dayan, who wrote a piece about the corruption in our government and society more broadly, and he would argue that it's not just about the corruption in our politics per se, but it's actually sort of on a bureaucratic level, and that, you know, we have this problem of the revolving door, but also part of the problem is that when you hear these Politico people saying, and, you know, you look at AT&T, the amount that they paid Michael Cohen, they feel pretty bad about it, apparently. They made a big mistake.
It had nothing to do with the Time Warner merger they wanted.
Nothing to do with the merger, I'm sure. Nothing to do with the, although it apparently says in their internal records, it was reported, I think, yesterday that it is. But nevertheless.
And Novartis, of course, they weren't trying to bribe anybody because they only were busted, I think, a year or two before
for bribing
Greek officials and government.
But they paid, what they paid Cohen was a fraction of what they spend on, it was 3.5% of the $16.8 million the company spent on lobbying in 2017. And the argument,
right.
And the argument that that Dayan is making, and this is becoming a much louder argument in certain areas on the left, that it is the way that we are applying things like antitrust and regulating corporations that is allowing them to have too much money. And
I think that's
and too much concentration of money.
It's impossible for anybody to argue the opposite. There is no good faith argument anyone can make and say, well, that one doesn't have to do with the other. I mean, if you're allowing companies to get this big, if you're allowing your Amazons and your Microsofts and your others to get to become monopolies,
it's probably on some level.
Of course, they're going to have all the money in the world.
When you talk about these drug behemoths. And you talk about the AT&T wanting to merge with Time Warner. These are all things that could be dealt with within the purview of antitrust. And, you know, you can do
You know
these...
who's been making great arguments on the left, Sam, which you've probably seen, you know, is Matt Stoller.
Sure, we've had Stoller on to talk about this.
I don't always find myself in alignment with Matt on everything. I think on this, I couldn't agree with him more. I honestly think that this goes beyond. This is at the heart of everything on the corporate side that is corrupt about our politics, is that we forgot what our early 20th century heritage of when we'd gotten to this point before, and your Teddy Roosevelt's, and he was a bigger name. There are a lot of names people don't know as well, where they made going out, you know, after these trusts, because they made that their mission, because they realized that you couldn't have a democracy if you had companies this big. It's impossible. They control too much infrastructure. They have too much money to spend to corrupt too many people. It really does. I think we can't have a democracy. I think was that a Louis Brandeis quote? I feel like it was.
Yeah.
But you can't have this kind of wealth disparity and have a democracy. You can have one or the other. But if you let it keep happening, and yes, some of that's in personal hands. When you get as ludicrous as what the Koch brothers have, or what Bezos has, or people like that. You know, it's chump change. It's kind of like what we've dealt with the whole Russia thing, which is when you're Vladimir Putin and you privatize Gazprom and all these, you steal state infrastructure and you're worth billions. How hard is it to be, if you can only buy Michael Cohen for $1.2 million and you've got billions to spend? That goes for Russia, Russian oligarchs. It goes for foreign dictators and other in certain other countries. It goes for big companies here. I mean, as we said, that's a rounding error. I mean, most journalists make nothing close to even anywhere close to that. Throw $500,000 in the right person's account, they'll do anything for you. And they might have access to the airwaves or whatever. So, I mean, I think it corrupts our system so fundamentally. It's impossible for us to carry on and be a real democracy if we keep allowing this shit to go on.
All right, let's turn for a moment to the Gina Haspel hearings, because you and I probably were on, you know, I don't know what show it was, 10, 12 years ago, talking about the torture regime. I imagine over the years, we have also talked about the failure of the Obama administration to hold anybody accountable for this stuff.
That was their. I mean, even more so than other things, I feel like we criticized them for. I think that was probably Barack Obama's biggest mistake.
And remember,
none of these people were.
John Brennan had some close proximity to this stuff too. Not nearly as close as Gina Haspel, but certainly close enough that to reward him with the directing the CIA, also a problem. Here is a clip.
Or he certainly should have had to answer for it, right? I mean, my view of all this stuff is there's context where different players play different roles, some much worse than others, but everybody has to come clean with what they did, almost like truth and reconciliation, and we need to know who did what, and some people you're going to put away for life, some people you're going to punish for shorter terms, some people might have been in a position where there wasn't as much they could do or weren't as close to it or maybe spoke up or whatever, and maybe they aren't as punished or maybe they even get credit. But we never had that. We never had a full accounting of who did what. And that to me is the huge problem.
All the turn the page crowd. But all right, here is Kamala Harris, who is grilling Gina Haspel. This is from earlier, I guess, 2 days ago. During the Senate intelligence hearing as to whether or not she's going to be confirmed. Like we say, it looks like she probably will be, but it's unclear.
Well,
do
they have all the Republicans? I know they've got Manchin.
Well, they don't have John McCain. And we'll see if.
Right. And do they have Rand Paul? I pretend that I hate all this stuff, but I always give in at the end.
Right, exactly. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else has announced their votes publicly yet. But here is Kamala Harris with Gina Haspel.
So one question I've not heard you answer is, do you believe that the previous interrogation techniques were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA officers to whom you referred.
It's a yes or no answer. Do you believe the previous interrogation techniques were immoral? I'm not asking, do you believe they were legal? I'm asking, do you believe they were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA did extraordinary work to prevent another attack on this country, given the legal tools that we were authorized to use.
Please answer yes or no. Do you believe in hindsight that those techniques were immoral?
Senator, what I believe sitting here today is that I support the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to.
Can you please answer the question?
Senator, I think I've answered the question.
No, you've not. Do you believe the previous techniques, now armed with hindsight, do you believe they were immoral? Yes or no?
Senator, I believe that we should hold ourselves to the moral standard outlined in the Army Field Manual.
Okay, a couple of things about this. First off, she obviously, Gina Haspel, can't say, like, to Kamala Harris, she can't tell her the truth. Like, I am trying to
be... Well, she's calling herself immoral, like a lot of people that were around her. So.
I am trying to be the head of the CIA. I am amoral. I am not capable of making that assessment is really what the answer is. Like, you don't get to be sitting where I'm sitting where morality is anything other than, like, you know, a vague sense of, like, I prefer vanilla over chocolate. I don't eat ice cream, so I don't even make that assessment. But what really is shocking to me is her saying that I subscribe to the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to, as if that moral standard came in 2006 or 2007, when we haven't passed any further legislation other than what already existed as far as torture. In 93, we had federal statutes under Reagan. We had federal statutes about torture in other countries.
Executive orders that Obama passed, like it was just executive orders, right? I mean, there hasn't been legislation. So
there was debate about the Army manual that she was talking about, but that doesn't even apply to the CIA. And the idea that we developed some new sense of what torture was after 2007 is absurd. It's just simply just an out and out lie. And this is where it ties in with Ollie North, the failure to hold these players accountable. right? And I get, you know, whether it was Ollie North, who was obviously was pardoned, but the, you know, whether it was during Watergate.
At least they tried to hold him accountable. At least I'll give him credit. I mean, the failure to do it and his, you know, the mistakes and how they did it, which was using testimony that was supposed to be immune when they probably, you know, he was supposed to, when they could have gotten him on so much else, it really pisses me off because, of course, you know, he didn't get exonerated of having committed crimes. It's like if the police, you know, do a don't follow Miranda procedure and somebody's or when somebody's arrested, you need to let them go. It doesn't mean they didn't actually commit the crime, right? Yeah. I mean, and so that's the thing is we know what Ollie North actually did. And the worst part, again, as so often is the case, and you can't really get past it, you know, and I don't know, you know, the answer is tough, but it's the existence of things like Fox News, because even though Ollie North's reputation had been lowered from that conviction and eventually when it was thrown out, you know, but he was able to go on Fox and host this you know, show about war stories in Korea and where all of this crap. They rehabilitated him, which they have the ability to do. With almost anybody. I mean, it may be soon that they don't need to because it seems the Republican Party, whether they may have rejected Don Blankenship, but he got a solid number of votes in that primary, whether it's him or Roy Moore or Arpaio or, you know, Gianforte or Grimm or, you know, I mean, they're very comfortable electing people or at least large chunks of the Republican base voting for people that actually are criminals quite out in your face. So maybe it doesn't matter anymore, but if it does, you know, places like Fox can rehabilitate people like Ollie North. And you know, that's so I agree with you 100%. We have to hold them accountable. But we've also allowed this kind of right-wing ecosystem to evolve. And under the protection of First Amendment claims, they can say anything and do anything. And they can help create monsters like this.
And again, yeah, I agree with you totally about Fox. But there has to be also like sort of a broader awareness to particularly amongst Democrats to hold people accountable when they can. And we know that they didn't do it with the Obama administration when it comes to torture. I mean, at one point, speaking of Ollie North, wasn't, you know, the Clinton campaign. Now, I'm convinced it was just some 25-year-old who didn't know any better, but was hailing. It was a John Poindexter at one point. During there was moments like there needs to be just sort of a bigger markers put down, because the fact of the matter is our society. And this is the thing, you know, we used to have on the old Majority Report with Janine, and maybe we should play this on the next thing. But and maybe we have. But Gore Vidal came on and he was talking about his book, The United States of Amnesia. And I never really fully grasped what he was talking about on some level. Like, I understood the idea that we didn't have any historical memory, but having lived through the Bush era and now getting here and seeing like how easy it is for George Bush to be lionized and the idea that Dick Cheney could come out and say, start up the torture program. Like, you and I now have lived this, right? I mean, intimately.
Well, you have to sort of be alive at least to your, you know, I think reach your 30s. You know, or something like that, and have lived through an era like we've lived through. Because I was, you know, I was pretty young during the Reagan years. But you know, I mean, Ollie North happened late enough that at least I have some historical memory. I remember him staying there and taking the oath and all that. And even that. Like,
but during the Bush years,
we can't even remember Bush. How are we going to remember anything from Reagan if we can't even remember Bush?
And it's like, you know, you and I now are old enough where we can see, you know, skinny ties coming back in or something like that. You know, just the cycle of this thing. But
that's what I'm not for.
But here's why it's so important. Where every generation that comes in that can hold people to account have to do it. Because if they don't, it begins to sort of aggregate. And it's like tartar that builds up. And it becomes that much harder to get rid of it. And this is what we're dealing with now. Where we like this, in moments of crises like this, this is where I think, I don't know, this is what I find problematic.
No, but all this stuff, and this is where, you know, when we did what we did in Libya, set the stage for God help us. You know, I mean, this is why Democrats need to be better when they're in office. But I mean, it's not even just that. I mean, because I don't think it's fair to put that all on them. But they, society, our culture, well beyond just elected officials, you know, those who have inordinate influence. I mean, public shame used to go a long way, you know, and it doesn't go very far anymore. And that's a huge problem. Because even whatever legal ramifications there were, it would have just been in the past that if somebody was, you know, I mean, after Joe McCarthy finally was called out by Murrow, and after he finally was called out by Margaret Chase Smith in the Senate, you know, he went away a broken man and died pretty much alone with a bottle. I mean, I don't say I wish that on anybody, but I do wish them to exit power and go somewhere where nobody ever talks to them again. And Dick Cheney, it's like he's a—I think he probably gets a new heart every year. The dude never goes away. He's like a vampire. He just keeps coming back, and he's back out there talking. I mean, like there need to be like legal consequences, political consequences, but there need to be cultural consequences. And that, to me, is also one of the biggest things we've lost. Is it just doesn't matter, like. You can be, I mean, think of the people that are, and again, Fox is a big part of that. It's not to say they're the only part of that, because I bet if I look through the MSNBC, NBC lineup and CNN, we'll find at least a couple characters like that too, who are very close to crime and got away with it. And but they've been rehabilitated culturally and they're acceptable figures to comment on stuff. I mean, you know, Gordon Liddy, to go back to even the Nixon years, being a mainstream figure, you know, and having a radio show and all this stuff and people being willing to go on it who are mainstream Republicans, when this dude was heard on tapes in the Nixon White House actually asking Nixon if he should kill people for him. I mean, you know, when we allow like these types of sociopaths to get away with this stuff, they're never going to go away. And why is Bolton able to be in the position he's in now? Because he never paid for being where he was under Bush.
Yep.
You know, and like that's where we are.
Lastly, Cliff, let me just ask you this. You literally wrote the book on John McCain. I hope they reissue it posthumously. He didn't write it, but you wrote it. But it would be nice if they reissued. But did you ever come across anybody, and did you use this term in your book, Songbird John?
Jesus Christ. I mean, no. You know, and like, I don't think.
Did you ever hear anybody refer to him as Songbird John?
That guy. Well, I don't even know where that stupid phrase comes from. I never came across it. Everybody I talked to. And I don't think you had me on. And that's when we probably met, when I came on about my book way back when. I have no idea if you read it or not, but we talked enough about it that you would know what I said in there. And I was incredibly critical and still am of John McCain, the valiant hero politician who is a better than us and is always going to make the right decision, and he's the maverick and do what's right. And I've always been so critical of that. But, you know, unlike these swift voting assholes, I never touched John McCain's service because it wouldn't deserve to be touched. What he did when he was a prisoner of war, I mean, he was tortured every 2 hours. Most of us, couldn't come close to taking what he took. But it's one of the most honorable part of John McCain is what he did when he was captured there. And, you know, to go after somebody about that, it just shows the disgustingness of the right. This man, whatever I think of him, and I've been incredibly critical, he's been terrible politically at times, but he's also done some good things at times. And in the end, like, he's dying. He has cancer and he's dying. And I think, you know, you got this one guy calling him Songbird John. You have Sadler, what's her name, a woman in the administration making jokes about how he's dying because apparently it's funny. It's not funny to make fun of Sarah Huckabee Sanders' eyeshadow. Hilarious to make fun of people that are dying of cancer, though. They're such disgusting people. You know, I mean, whatever I can say, and I can say a lot of negative things about McCain's political career compared to most Republicans these days, pretty good compared to what he portrays himself as, nothing close. But Jesus, the man's dying of cancer, and, you know, leave him alone.
Well,
I mean, that's what I would
say. I don't know if I fully subscribe to that. I mean, I think, you know, if the guy's being lionized, I feel quite obligated to.
Oh, that's different.
But
that's different. Sam, I guess let me be very clear. Keep criticizing his political.
But
career.
Of the one, I mean, thing, saying, honestly, but, the but one thing I think I would not criticize John McCain for. And I think I fully felt it was legitimate to ask whether or not, the torture he was subjected to left him in a position with a disposition that was appropriate to be president.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Now
I,
that
I
seems sort of
that.
A ridiculous relative to what we end up
when
with.
When you're going
to
be president,
but
there's nothing that should be off the record. You know, when it comes to everything that can affect your health and your mentality, as we've seen with the current guy whose doctor basically threw darts at a board and decided what the answers were to the various questions about him, or just watch old Zeus movies so he could quote from them and tell us how, you know, strong as bone is Trump. But I mean, no, of course, I asked those questions in the book too. Those needed to be asked about his temperament, everything. I'm talking about there's two things you should lay off the guy on. It's cancer, and it's the fact that you're calling him things like Songbird John about when he was tortured.
Unless,
his political career is completely fair game.
Unless you have no fingernails on your fingers and you've lost a couple of toes and half your ear's been cut off in the course of the torture that right. you went through, it's just beyond me that someone could say, like, we called him right. Songbird John.
Right, what? And this isn't left and right. Like, this is another thing where the right shows there's no decency left there. This is just human decency. When someone's dying of cancer, you don't make fun of them for dying of cancer. When someone's dying of cancer, you don't bring up bullshit things like Songbird John and go after them and try to claim that somebody who stayed in the camp for 5 years, you know, was somebody who was ratting people out and stuff like that. There's plenty of things. You want to go after his politics? I've done it. I will always do it. You know, I mean, I'm not talking about lionizing him. I'm talking about putting him in the proper perspective, which is he's somebody that did some good things along the way on campaign finance reform and some other things. His motivations weren't as pure, nearly as pure as people would say. But he supported some good things. He voted for background checks against his party on guns. He's done some good stuff. Overall, he's been a huge disappointment. He hasn't lived up nearly up to the media image he's created. Absolutely. And that should be told. That story should be told. But the cancer and the war and being tortured, you're going to go after the guy for that? I mean, Jesus, you know, I feel like taking out the old, have you no decency? I mean, who does that? You know, it's like when Rush Limbaugh went after Chelsea Clinton when she was 12 years old. Yeah. Or, I mean, there's just, you know, or they went after some of the disabled kids who came out and talked about, you know, needing health care. I mean, the lack of decency on the right. It's just these are just terrible, appalling people. That's who they are.
On that note, Cliff, thank you so much. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, Sam.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bud. Bye. All right, folks, we got to take a quick break and pick up Film Guy Matthew. Are we going to play, do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? Did you pull that bad boy?
Do you want that before here or after the Film Guy Matthew?
I think we could probably do it after if you can't find it. Folks, just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. We continue to do our free show day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out. I was talking to somebody last night who was just, we both are recently separated, but his lifestyle is just different than mine, because he lives sort of like a comedian's lifestyle. I mean, that's what I relate it to, like where it's like, oh, you know, I may have a meeting tomorrow and I have a loose deadline. I got to get this paper in, you know, I got to write this thing up later or do that. But it's all. Then I was like, yeah, no, we do the show day in, day out, day in, day out, day in. Folks, and as a way of saying thank you, we give you some extra content and called the Fun Half. And if you don't have the finances for the Fun Half, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject line, you know, need a break on the Fun Half, or hey, how about a break on the Fun Half, or something like that. Day in, day out. Something like that. But if you do have the resources to become a member, join themajorityreport.com. All right, quick break, and we're going to pick up Film Guy Matthew.
Independent.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen. As is our tradition on Friday, and we have deviated in some regards from this tradition, back in the day, back before there was this ubiquity of streaming services, when Netflix was still something unique in terms of its streamingness, I started having people on Fridays to tell me, to suggest something for me to watch streaming-wise, because I could not go out to see a movie. It was just too much, too difficult. You know, pay a babysitter, you know, 4 hours of babysitting in New York City at a minimum is, you know, $80. Maybe, you know, maybe you can get away with $17 per, if you find a like a high school student or something like that. And then you got to go to the movie theater and then you get to pay for the popcorn. And then all of a sudden you've dropped like $200. And so I was like, why would I do that when I can spend $8 a month to get movies streaming? And we started to do that. But then over time, you know, I just lost complete interest in watching anything about anything anymore anyways. But we retained one pure, pure film recommender. And thus this. Matthew, I hope that you appreciated the way I did that, because I felt that was very sort of like Maddow-esque in a way, right? Wasn't it like you didn't know where I was going? I mean, I could have started with something like, you know, on 17th Street and 7th Avenue, there is a water hydrant, and I would pass that water hydrant on the one time that I would go to the movie theater and regret that I had just seen a bad movie, and then I could have just wrapped it through there. But I did not.
Yeah, you could have gone even further afield to get back to me. Yeah, but no, that was nice and tight. I appreciated that. Thank you.
Now, Matthew, let me ask you this. Are you calling from Dennis Miller's studio? It sounds like you're...
I'm sitting next to 1,400 unopened Dennis Miller dolls.
Well, let's just give it 30 seconds before we get into your eBay sales for a moment.
No, please. There's nothing pressing with eBay now. It's, you know, you got to kind of leave it fallow for a little while. But if anyone wants to make me an offer on any of the things that I have available right now, I'm accepting all offers. So there's no auctions. It's just a lot of buy it nows. Okay, so that ends that.
I understand that. And let's just talk for one moment about the moniker Film Guy. Did that emanate out of this program, or was that a Break Room Live thing?
No, that was all you. That's all you to differentiate me, I believe, from Lawyer Matthew originally.
Oh, exactly. That is exactly what it was.
It was Matthew Lawyer, and I'm Matthew Film Guy.
That's right.
It just stuck, and now it's just my entire persona. I have everyone call me that everywhere I go.
Right, and not to be confused with Old Matt or New Matt.
Right.
We're like so
wonderful Matts in their own right.
Indeed.
It's a lot of Matt.
Now that we're reminiscing, Matthew. It is.
I go by Matthew.
It is May 11th, and if I am not mistaken, exactly 18 years ago, during this time, we were shooting A Bad Situationist. Holy crap! Was this 18 years ago?
It was 17, but still, that's a holy crap.
No, yeah. Pause it. Oh yeah, it was 17. It was May 2001. And we were shooting this movie. You were this is where when you and I met your professor at or not, he wasn't your Ray Carney was not your professor.
No, he was not my professor. He was just a dude that I had gotten to know through our mutual film guide-ness.
And he was a Cassavetes expert who teaches film.
Right.
I believe he still teaches up at BU. And he was a fan of my first movie, and I asked him if he had any students who wanted to work on a film. And he sent me a couple of people. One of the people he sent was you. And I was interviewing you to be my assistant because I was directing and acting. And so I needed someone to help me, you know, manage those things. And after I met you, I decided I want to hire you also to play my assistant, my character's assistant in the movie, so that you would always be there next to me with my director's notebook. And it would just appear to be a prop. And here
I love this story. I really love this story.
And then of course, you know, as you got a crush on somebody on the set, like it became harder and harder to find you.
There we go. Getting me in trouble again.
Nice. But how did that work out?
That was many, many years ago. All right. But, Matthew,
it was like 17 years is like an entire like drunk driving teenager ago.
You posted a clip of John Benjamin, who is playing Orthodox postal worker, a Jewish postal worker.
Right.
Who
his orthodoxy is not about his postal worker; it's about his Judaism.
That's right.
He's an Orthodox Jewish postal worker
in the movie.
Although he might be an Orthodox postal worker too.
It's true. In the movie, he and his compatriot, played by Marc Maron. Also a postal worker who was Orthodox.
I remember him.
Try and get my character, who is the son of Joe Lieberman, to commit a terrorist attack. I mean, people can see where this is going as to why the movie never really took off after we were editing in 9/11.
He wanted to blow up the U.S. Postal, like the headquarters of the U.S. Post Office.
Yeah. I have a sketch idea of, or it's
I don't know why that wasn't as funny as we intended it to be, but I thought it was funny.
I don't know why that
hit
the wall.
Of Joe Lieberman watching this, being like, oh, that's funny. My fictional
son's blowing
up. Apparently
there turns out to
up.
Be a son, that he does actually have a son. But here's a scene, and I don't know why you clipped it. You can tell us why. But here is the scene of John Benjamin exiting the apartment where I've just had an intellectual salon and had or many people over, I guess. That's why I'm wearing a name tag. He says
that
goodbye.
Doesn't explain the sweater vest over the Izod shirt. But
well, that was like a tennis look.
Right. You consider this a tennis look? Okay.
It was nice to have met you, Matthew. Shalom. Shalom?
He taught me that.
Hey.
That's it. That is the clip. That is the clip.
Wait. The
that didn't make it into the movie. That's like in my own treasure.
Oh, that did not
of,
make it into the movie.
Matthew
okay.
Extras.
Okay.
Yeah. That's an extra. But I had tweeted that out to John because I just bought his audiobook, you know, Failure is an Option, and I was hoping to get him to sign it for me.
Oh, I see. And I don't even think he saw it, to be honest with you. I don't even think he saw that tweet.
I'm sure he did.
Because I just
I'm
sent
sure
him that clip, and he thought it was funny.
He's
he
very self-absorbed.
Totally self-absorbed. He doesn't read anything that comes at him.
Right.
Incidentally, that
it's
book is
out,
folks.
No, that's fine. I loved him. I saw him on Colbert. I was very happy for him with the book. So,
yeah, he told a story that about a threesome gone awry. And I remember that
was
story.
That wasn't you, was it?
No,
that wasn't you.
No, that was
you
not
the
me.
Other guy.
Oh, God, please, no.
That.
No, John and I
was imagining that.
When we were in college, we would just strip naked and just lie next to each other. We never had a third party.
He's like, why aren't we doing it the way Sam and I do it usually?
Yeah, it was. What was that that clip about? You just have like a series of memes from Bad Situationists that you've saved for 17 years?
Oh, I have an amazing treasure trove of things going back to, you know, I've archived film and video that my grandfather and father took. So I have a massive treasure trove. You know, my family and I do one of these photo shares on iTunes or whatever, iPhoto, because my sisters both now have babies. I have a nephew and a niece. So occasionally they'll play something of their baby doing something, and I can immediately call up, oh, here's you doing the exact same thing. Oh, here's mom being just like you are, you know, and so I'm kind of like the family DJ of the home movies. And that extends to John Benjamin, too. So something like that comes up in the news, he's in the news, and I go right to my Bad Situationist trope, because I do have a lot of outtakes that never... I mean, the movie itself never really made it into the movie, if you will. But
that's
I
true.
Have a lot of stuff that,
in many respects,
that also didn't make it there. There's so much great stuff left on the cutting room floor. I mean, the whole scene with Stephen Colbert,
yep.
where he almost killed him when the window fell on his head, that's just like
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. I almost killed Stephen Colbert.
I wonder if when John was just on Colbert, I wonder if they had a moment like, yeah, remember we did that movie at Sam Cedar's condo and like I almost got killed?
I can totally assure you that they did not. They did not have any memory of that
whatsoever.
Colbert
was very nice about it. He literally could have had a lawsuit, you know, sue everybody.
Yep.
Sue everybody.
He was, yes, he was very, he was a very nice guy.
Wasn't he from the South?
South Carolina.
Well, there you go.
North Carolina, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew, what else
yes,
have
Sam?
You, what else have you been up to now that you are still basking in the glow of your political victory in getting those trucks off of, out of Queens? What is the latest that you are up to these days?
I'm just back to my normal film guy life, you know, teaching my classes, running my little media empire here from Astoria, Queens.
Working on the Cernovich documentary?
Oh, yes. I can't wait to start that.
Great. Mm. There's a lot of people who agree with that.
We are working on that. I'm just being facetious. We are working on that ever so slowly, but we're getting that going. And, yeah, that's going to be out as soon as it's ready. I'm also, you know,
I'm glad to hear that.
For you.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, but so am I. I mean, I haven't spent all the money yet, so if you know, we can talk about it.
Matthew.
But I'm also, you know, I'm putting the finishing touches on Ted Alexandro's Hour special. That's finally going to come out. I don't know if you recall, I shot that last year.
Okay.
That's great. That's a great hour. Ted Alexandro, everybody should know his comedy if you're political and you like comedy. He's one of the great political but also kind of just insightful comedians working today.
Yeah,
He's
I think we've had him on the
with Jim Gaffigan.
We've had him on the show, haven't we? A while back.
Yeah,
while back.
he was down at Occupy. So
oh,
you
that's
had
right.
Him, around those times, he was
oh, wow.
active there. But
he's got good power.
TedAlexandro.com and see his stuff.
What is the latest film you've been showing to your annex class of elderly folks at the JCC?
Well, I'm actually doing a war movie module right now. So I've been showing them movies that are basically, you can consider them war movies, but they're not the kind of mainstream kind of rah-rah jingoistic kind of war movies. I'm showing, you might call them art war movies. So there's two really good ones that I wanted to talk about on the show today. I don't know if you ever heard of the Battle of Culloden. It's one of the last internecine British wars. It was fought between Scots and Englishmen. It was like the Jacobeans, and I don't know if you know that whole story about the different kind of Protestant Catholic kind of lines that were drawn there. And it was basically a massacre. And one of my favorite filmmakers in the world, this was his first film that I hadn't actually seen until recently. And it's become one of my favorite documentary style movies. Now, again, Sam, you'll want to talk about how you participated in the mockumentary style. Yes, you did. You made a very good entry into that genre. But Peter Watkins was doing it in the 60s. This was done in a kind of BBC documentary style. It's called Culloden, and it's actually available on YouTube, but it came out through Criterion Collection. Yeah, there you go. It's just an amazing... No, you've got the wrong one up there.
Is it the wrong one?
Yeah. It's like shot with handheld cameras.
What is the name of the what is the name of the movie?
Culloden. Culloden.
It's just Culloden is the name of the movie.
Yeah, just Culloden.
Okay.
And you can Google Culloden Peter Watkins. And it is incredible because it's shot as if there was a BBC news crew there in 1780, whatever it was. It was late 18th century. And it's just harrowing. It's gripping. It's amazing. It's all non-professional actors. And it's like voiceover. It's like extremely... stylistic, but it's also really involving. I mean, it basically encapsulates all the same kind of issues of war and resource control and the way sort of poor people are pressured into fighting rich people's wars. It's just an incredible just entry into the genre of war movies. And it's a great history lesson, too, because I didn't know almost anything about this. I sort of knew at some point the Highlanders, their way of life was kind of, they were sort of like the Mexicans of the UK, basically. They were kind of used and thrown away. And this was a very complicated set of circumstances that led to this war. And the Watkins film just sort of lays it all bare. Yeah,
I love the concept of doing history that way.
Yes. It's mind-blowing. It's so cool. You know, the other thing I wanted to mention movie-wise...
Didn't
Haskell
Wexler also did like a docudrama, didn't he? Like Look Out Haskell, It's Real or something like that?
Oh, I don't know that one. I know Medium Pool. That was an actual documentary sort of hybrid.
Well, maybe it was Medium Pool where that line... maybe that's what I'm thinking about. But I think like there was a line in that... that movie, like Look Out Haskell, yeah. it's real. I think a line from Medium Cool that actually he kept in there. It was in Medium Cool. Yes. Look Out Haskell, It's Real was the making of Medium Cool.
Oh yeah. It's in the making of, okay.
It was actually a film about the making of it.
I see. Well, everyone should go out and see that one, too.
Okay,
I want to also just bring up real quick another war film that I brought to the class that actually I only went and saw because Yanis Varoufakis name-checked it in his interview with Russell Brand. And it is a Ken Loach film. I don't know if everyone's familiar with Ken Loach, but if not, and you're politically active, you should definitely see all of Ken Loach's films. Normally, Ken Loach, he's a British filmmaker. He makes these kind of kitchen sink kind of dramas of the working class and the lower classes and how they struggle against the system and are inevitably chewed up by it. But he made this one film in 95 called Land and Freedom, which was actually about a British gentleman who was a communist in the 30s who went over to Spain to try to fight for the revolution there. And it's basically he gets caught up in the kind of different kind of internecine battles between the Stalinists and what was called the PUM, who were kind of the Marxist army over there. And he kind of meets with a bit of disillusionment. It's really interesting to see that kind of a circular firing squad that we talk about on the left and how it kind of really worked to the advantage of the fascists in Spain. It's just also an involving drama. It's a personal drama. You know, you live with the unit as he goes over there and fights with them. And that's another one that's high on the list of war movies in my book, Land and Freedom.
That sounds super good.
Land and Freedom.
Yeah, it is super good. Jamie, I'm sure you'll love it. Michael, Matt, everybody.
Spanish Civil Wars is really important to folks like me.
It was a tough time. tough stuff.
Tough time.
Tough stuff.
That's a good new character. The
incredible
Trump DSA.
People.
The Spanish. I mean, that was like it in a certain sense. There was a lot happening.
Incredible war.
A lot
incredible.
Of stuff going on. But I will tell you, it was tough stuff, if you ask anybody in Spain.
Stalin is somebody a lot of people are talking about, I noticed lately.
Stalin did a lot of things.
He was incredible stuff, tough.
By the way, Death of Stalin, that's a good movie. Yeah. Lived up to the hype.
I'm on. That's on my short list. You know, in the middle of Land and Freedom, though, there's a really great debate when they take over a rich landowner's estate as to exactly how they should nationalize it or collectivize it, and the different arguments against, like, if we do this too much, will it scare the United States away from supporting us? And all those debates are, like, I think extremely relevant, especially in this world of, you know, creeping back socialism back into kind of acceptability.
Yeah, totally.
And all this talk of collectivizing things and you know, how to do it in a way that doesn't immediately result in being wiped out, which basically did happen to them.
Yeah. Before I looked into the history, I just assumed that Franco came in and crushed this beautiful libertarian socialist revolution. But it turns out it was Stalin.
Yeah. Yeah, there was this
tough guy.
Some people say Stalin did it, others Franco, but there's a lot of ideas. But it's very nice. By the way, you can call yourself a socialist now. Isn't that nice?
Michael, do you want to tell everybody about the date we went on, how I took you out to the movies?
You wined and dined me and took me to see Black Panther? No, you go ahead. It was very, yeah, do you have the roses or something?
Yeah, I kept them.
Yeah, go ahead. Now you can tell. Now you can tell the story. It's a little loud, though.
I wanted to show Michael how the hot bourgeois filmgoers do it, and I took him to the iPic in Fulton Market. You guys know what that is? It's like the
they wouldn't. They're plebes, mad.
We're in the Fulton Market here.
No.
What, downtown
Manhattan?
In Manhattan. Oh, okay. No.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a top shelf movie going experience. It's like the tickets are like $28 each for like the leather recliners and the waiters.
Total tourist trap.
Cocktails and
tough stuff.
It's super decadent, but it's the only way to watch a Hollywood movie because you're also in a little pod, so it's like the next person that you're not with is like 10 feet away from you, so you can kind of have your own commentary going, which was enjoyable.
Yeah.
That would be good for someone like me who really likes to talk shit during movies to the point where Sean's almost had to fight multiple people because of me.
Like, what do you do? Yeah, you yell at the... Are you like one of those people who yells at the screen?
I was not even being that loud, all right? This was a very dumb movie.
I feel like if you have to say that...
Matt Damon was trying to ruin Jodie Foster's beautiful lesbian planet, and it needed to be mocked.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, Elysium.
Oh, I didn't see Elysium.
It's like Matt Damon class struggle in future space.
Oh, well, okay.
How many space movies is he in? What was the other one?
He does a lot of space. I don't know.
Mars.
I was trying to figure out how that was like a lesbian planet. But
Mars is super lesbian.
Anyway, what's this place called? Because I need to go there.
iPic. iPic.com. Cool. There's one in the Fulton Market, and there's also one in iPic
the lesbian.
City.
My husband will be very grateful for this recommendation.
Yeah. And they have like pretty decent, like, you know, bar food that they bring you. And if you order goobers, they'll bring it to you in like in a martini glass. So they tart it all up.
Really?
You know, full bar. Yeah.
As you can imagine, it was a very good viewing experience. Very good.
Yeah. And every time we saw Black Panther, and every time they said Jabari, I just looked at Michael.
And I looked back, and we shared a moment.
Yeah, and we just shared a moment.
We gazed in each other's eyes.
Now,
okay, Jabari.
Look, this is very
sweet.
All
right, Jabari, whatever you want.
What, I just one
Black
more
Panther's
thing
on, a movie,
on Land and Freedom. Where can I watch that?
Oh, I don't know, Sam. Just, you can figure it out.
Thank you, Matthew Film Guy.
Okay, but
he can't hold your hands anymore.
In all honesty, can you now go see movies? Is this like something changed in your life that allows you now to actually
do have more time to see movies. My intention is to go one of those Alamos theaters. Check that out.
I
have this image of Sam Jimmy Stewart movies, like with like a top hat on, like dancing through the streets, just all the activities you could do now. It's like, I'll take you to a movie.
I'll get a PS4 or PSP.
Right. And it's all just going to be, you're not going to see any movies. You'll just play video games.
No, I won't. And I probably won't even get the video
Golden game. Eye, as far as the eye can see.
I am actually trying to teach myself the ukulele, but that's a different story. We'll get
really?
To that. Yeah.
Mary's learning the ukulele too.
I want to be able to accompany Milo when she sings occasionally. That's why. So.
Oh, that's great! I could see you doing a good tiptoe through the tulips.
Ah, a Tiny Tim reference.
There you go. Don't think I'm not able to go there. I will go there.
So, Matthew, the two films that you're recommending are Culloden by Peter Watkins from 1964,
right?
Land and Freedom from 1995 by Ken Loach.
Yeah,
and both.
I've also been watching The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, but oh my god, that show is disgusting.
Has it started up again?
I just finished the first season, but it is torture porn. It is like rape porn. I'm still watching it, but
did you join Hulu to do that? You got to join Hulu to do that, right?
Yeah, I joined Hulu. I join everything. I got it all: Netflix, Hulu.
Okay.
Don't you think that show? Matthew, don't you think that show is just a delightful piece of bourgeois propaganda?
I mean, I could see it that way. My initial response to it is just like, it wants to have its cake and eat it too. It's like, look how horrible this all is. But then let's look at it for 20 loving minutes. Like,
did you actually look at, did you see the Hulu marketing material for it? Called it a bourgeois propaganda. That's how they market it.
What makes it bourgeois propaganda?
You wouldn't understand.
We're working on this for an episode of the Antifada after
exactly.
It's finished. But basically, the moral of the story seems to be that this is what happens when you don't vote for Hillary. Everyone is a professional woman. That's like, you're supposed to empathize with them because they love their
work
jobs
here.
And this identify is, that way. And like, this is what
based
happens.
Based on the book, right? I mean, the book was written...
Yeah,
in 1985.
There was a movie made of it in the 80s, too. It was
about what happens if you don't vote for Geraldine Ferraro in 1985.
Right. Also, the music is fucking terrible. Like, whoever's doing the music needs to be fired. It's always so incredibly incongruous.
Whoa. All of a sudden, you're calling for people to lose their fucking jobs. What kind of socialist broad are you? What the hell's the matter with you?
I'm sure that this person only has this job because they're somebody's kid.
There you go.
Ooh, now you're speaking my language.
I don't remember.
One particular scene made me laugh out loud with the music cue. Like, they're walking down the street after they kind of like have this one small
spoiler alert
towards the end of the first season. No spoilers. And then it's like they're like Reservoir handmaidens. They're like badasses, slow-mo walking towards the camera. That was like an unintentional laugh for me on that one.
Oh, so many of them in that show. So many.
Well,
but I'm still compelled to watch it.
Oh, same.
Well, there you go.
I would like to write in a Jordan Peterson character for season 3. That would be fun.
In the show, he's in Canada, the land of freedom. So I'm sure he's probably still living it up.
No, he's in Canada. Being like, what are we doing? Why don't we have forced labor camps for these bitches?
And like the economy of the show makes no sense either.
What's
but
that? Sorry.
You know what? I'm working on my fully formed critique, so I'll save that for later, I guess. The economy of this show, though, is it makes no sense.
But everybody should be fired.
Okay. I look forward to that.
Fire all of them. The set design, the production.
Wait, is that me saying that?
No, that's Jamie actually.
Oh my god, Jamie got you got to come voice, up with buddy. A new. You got to come up with a new.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's
the differential.
Jamie's Jewish, so he's allowed to do that voice.
Exactly. Oh, there we go. There we go. The truth comes
Thank
out.
Thank you for a little essentialism.
All right. Well, film guy Matthew, those two. We will put those two into the pantheon of film guy Matthew recommendations.
Great, and I will add them to my IMDb list, which. Of all the films I've recommended here, so people can go check that out.
And when we actually update the blog, it's only been now 5 months, we will definitely link to that. So by the time we do that, and IMDb no longer exists because there's no internet anymore,
then we will do that. But one question is, do you guys still have the Bible flashcards hanging around with the new set changeover? I hope those didn't get lost in the shuffle.
George stole them.
Matt? Jamie, where are they?
Okay, Film Guy Matthew, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it, buddy. Always a pleasure. Beep, boo. Okay.
Wow. Well, that was some cold shit right
had
there.
Had to go.
Gotta jump.
Everybody, we will put a link, obviously, to Film Guy Matthew's Twitter handle and, of course, his eBay page and his IMDb page and every other way that he monetizes his entire life. Folks, we will head into the fun half in just a moment. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off of your coffee purchases. Fair trade coffee, delicious coffee, ladies and gentlemen. Again, join the Majority Report if you want to become a member of this program and support it. Check out the Michael Brooks Show on Tuesday night. Of this week, you had Glenn Greenwald on.
Wednesday,
is that right?
Greenwald, yes.
It was Wednesday.
Wednesday this week.
Oh, Wednesday.
This Tuesday, Allison Hartson and Bhaskar Sankara.
You can subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you never miss an episode. And, of course, you can also find it at our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SamSeder. You can just Google Majority Report YouTube. You will find it that way. And check out Antifada, The Antifada, at patreon.com/TheAntifada.
We have a new episode out right now.
Now, this is not the one where you you take on The Handmaid's Tale, right?
No, we're waiting for the season finale for that. Oh, but I'm very excited.
Handmaid's Tale is freaking garbage, I'll tell you that.
This one was about incels and a little recap of the DSA convention that I attended earlier that day.
There you go. It is patreon.com/TheAntifada. All right, here is Jimmy Reefer Cake's song of the week. What is it called, Matt?
It's a The End, and everything's lowercase except for the E on end. So I don't know if that's stylistic, but I wanted to flag that.
The End. And wait, say that again?
It's lowercase the, and then end, the E is capitalized.
The End.
So I think it might be significant.
I think you pronounce it The End in that instance.
It's The End.
Okay, there you go.
This is the end, beautiful friend, the end.
Yeah.
This is the end. Iran nuclear deal, the end. Trump calls treaties deals, the end. TV with his meals, the end. More broken trust to heal, the end. Will they ever sign another deal again? Can you picture what will be so limitless and free? Desperately in need of a better plan in a war-torn land.
133.
Lost in a Middle East wilderness of pain, and all the Zionists are insane, waiting for the bombs to rain. There's a danger on the edge of Bethlehem. Ride the king's highway. Palestinians are not allowed on. Ride the king's highway west, baby. The west is the best. Take it by force, give them the rest. Trumpy awoke before dawn. Put his wig on. He took a moment to tweet something hateful, and he walked on down the hall. And he came to a door, and he looked inside.
Okay.
Oh, nope.
Melania,
you're the yeah. It might
yes, Donna. I want a divorce.
Here we go.
Ivanka. Oh, no. I want to.
Oh, no.
Fuck you.
Yes.
Love me. Oh, yeah. Fuck you. Man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. Ivanka. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is.
All right. Jimmy's back.
Very true to the.
Wow, I thought there was actually that was some of the more astute commentary on the reality of the Palestinian situation, Trump and Ivanka. That's some of the more cogent thinking I've heard from Jimmy in really maybe that potentially
was,
ever.
That was very true to the original song. And you know, I can't help but speaking of war movies, think of Apocalypse Now, because that. That song they were playing when Colonel Kunst, I think it was they were, oh, no, when Martin Sheen was killing the colonel and they were also slaying the oxen.
Oh, yeah, when they cut it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Another fine film ruined by a terrible, terrible band called The Doors.
Wow. Jamie. Whoa.
She's just trying to declare war on like, all the boomers.
I'm the only one who feels that way.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
What?
Thank you. What a hack.
The Doors are what? What? Brendan's got feelings on this.
Thank you. Doors are the worst classic rock.
Oh, my God.
The best thing that
Jim Morrison got a lot of extra credit for being hot. Let's be real.
The best thing that the Doors, the best thing the Doors ever did is the Takeover sample that Kanye used for Jay. That's dope.
Wow.
That's a Doors sample on the Takeover. That's hot.
All right. Well, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun app. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. You can IM us through our app. You can always get that app. It is for free. It's at majorityapp.com. All right. See you in the fun half.